Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We also remember the art that challenged our assumptions, the scholarship that brought us closer to the events of our history, the poetry that we loved, or at least the poetry that we might recite to a girlfriend to seem deep.
Now, President Obama, if you allow the Zionists to push you to mount a military offensive against Gaddafi, and you go in and kill him as you did with Saddam Hussein, the Zionists say, look, we got a chance. Gaddafi's weak now. Let's send Hillary to Switzerland and get the United Nations to come on board so we can give a military response. So they're building up all this killing. But you don't really know that that's true, do we? That's what they're saying. Some of it could be. But hell, you gotta check a devil. You gotta check a liar. And you don't have the means by which to check them because you're a slave to the corporate media of America.
There is the Black Hitler of America, Louis Farrakhan, blaming the Zionists for wanting to stop the madman Gaddafi from machine gunning and jetting his own people. And before that, we heard our own esteemed leader who suffers from Obama's complaint. He was giving out awards, don't you know? That is, our esteemed leader Obama was giving out awards. This is the same day that a Muslim killed two U.S. airmen in Germany. Didn't hear about that one? Didn't make it to your local paper? Allah Akbar, once again, another Fort Hood massacre. Didn't make it to your local media outlet, all obsessed with old Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen is all you hear, huh? Charlie Sheen, Charlie Sheen, Charlie Sheen. Didn't hear about the Muslim who shouted Allah Akbar at the Frankfurt airport and executed two American airmen on a bus because they were unarmed by Obama? Unarmed! Again, we have U.S. military without a weapon to defend themselves by Obama, who's giving out awards at the White House while the world is on fire, while Libya is on fire, while the people are trying to liberate themselves in Iran and in Libya. He's giving out awards for Portnoy's complaint. Farrakhan, the Hitler of our time, says Jews and Zionists are trying to push the U.S. into war and are a cover for Satan. Basically called Jews Satan again. Farrakhan said, my job is to pull the cover off Satan so that he will never deceive you and the people of the world again. This is Hitler in our own time, in our own country, right in Chicago, and a good friend of Obama. Now, what a president does when a Hitler like this appears is he gets up there and he uses the bully pulpit to say, in no uncertain terms, I condemn Louis Farrakhan's hatred. But he didn't say that, did he? Instead, he gave out an award to Philip Roth for a book he wrote 50 years ago called Portnoy's Complaint, about a man who had an excessive desire to masturbate. This is the president. That's his idea of great literature, Portnoy's Complaint. I realized Portnoy's Complaint was a funny Woody Allen-type book. I realize liberal critics love Portnoy's Complaint, and they would think anyone who doesn't get the humor of a boy going in the bathroom to relieve himself in that manner is kind of not in with the times. But I wonder what Obama's complaint would be if I wrote the novel about him. If you read Portnoy's Complaint, it was a description of an illness called for this character named Portnoy, and it was a complaint that was typified by certain symptoms. That's what he meant by Portnoy's Complaint. I guess if I wrote a book called Obama's Complaint, it would describe a man who has an excessive absorption with his own ego, an inability to focus on issues of national security, a man who has an Oedipal government media complex, a man with an irritable Bolshevik syndrome, a man with an oral disorder characterized by speaking out of both sides of his mouth, a man with dietary hypocrisy disorder, and a chronic dislike of men and fatigue syndrome. Unbelievable to me what's going on. Shooter allegedly a German Muslim. The gunman suspected of killing U.S. airmen outside Frankfurt Airport is a German-born devout Muslim, another devout Muslim. Bring more in. Bring them all in. Build more mosques. That's what we need in this country. More mosques, more Muslims from the Middle East. In an interview with the Associated Press in Kosovo, 70-year-old Recep Uca said the suspected gunman, Arid Uca, was born and raised in Germany after his parents moved there from Kosovo 40 years ago. You hear? Multiculturalism. The uncle says Arid is a pious Muslim whose grandfather was a religious leader. Religious leader. You can just imagine what hate came out of his mouth. At a mosque in the village of Zabar near Mitrovica, Kosovo. Frankfurt Airport refused to comment on whether the suspect worked there. He shouted Allah Akbar and killed U.S. Air Force personnel on a bus who were unarmed by Obama. Now, what's interesting here is this is a Muslim Kosovar whose people were liberated by the U.S. Air Force from Christian Serbs. That's the interesting part here. Allegedly, the poor Muslims were oppressed by the Serbs, and Bill Clinton was so moved by it all that he camouflaged U.S. planes with NATO markings and bombed the Serbs into the Stone Age and liberated the Kosovar Albanians and other Muslims who were so oppressed. And here's the reward that he got. Here's the reward we got for Bill Clinton's liberalism. A Muslim Kosovar kills U.S. airmen. This is beyond irony. It's beyond irony that the very men of the very Air Force that liberated his people from the evil Christian Serbs, who, by the way, were only trying to defend themselves from a takeover by Muslims. If you study the history of Kosovo, you'll realize it was a part of Serbia since the 1300s, but I wouldn't bore you with history. I realize it's too burdensome if you're only watching Jersey Shore. You wouldn't want to know anything about the 1300s. That might put you over the edge altogether. So here we have the president awards the National Medal of Arts and the National Humanities Medal. Again, another party for the first family, while the world's on fire. Two U.S. Air Force personnel executed by a Muslim. Libya on fire, doesn't send in warplanes to save the Libyan people. That is our president, doesn't send in planes to save the Libyan people from the madman Gaddafi, who vows to fight to the last man. And Farrakhan says Jews are behind the war. Oil's going through the ceiling. Gold is through the ceiling. And where's Waldo? Well, Waldo's giving out awards to the man who wrote Portnoy's complaint about a young man who couldn't control himself in that particular manner. Gunman kills two U.S. airmen at German airport, shouts Allah Akbar. And what's going on in Pakistan? What's going on in Pakistan? Muslim militants assassinated the only Christian minister in Pakistan. Executed him. Not one word from Obama. Instead, he tells little jokes about poetry to your girlfriend. And so here's the world as we see it. Here's the world as we see it. It's very hard to have fun today on the radio, I got to tell you. When we have a man who is so completely disconnected from reality in the White House, and we have a complicit media, and we have a Hollywood that is so disconnected from reality that it's obsessed with a drug-addicted, wife-beating fool, and we have a Hitler in our own midst, and nobody in the media will say that Farrakhan is a Hitler in our own midst. Tell me how we're going to save this nation. Farrakhan would like to see a race war in America. He predicted that what's happened in Egypt and Algeria is going to happen here. And now today he goes up and he starts screaming, it's the Jews again, calling Jews Satan. Any response from the great ADL, Abe Foxman, who wouldn't lift a finger to help me with England? Oh, yes, Abe Foxman gave a very strong message, which I've forgotten already. A meek little message from Abe Foxman. The same Abe Foxman who wouldn't even answer my letter asking him to get behind my desire to get my name off the list of murderous Muslims in England. But let's not go into that one. That's what's going on in the world. And what's going on in your world? Oh, what are you concerned about? What's the pebble in the shoe for you, my friends? Let's talk about Minister Louis Farrakhan, the Hitler of America. Okay? Let's listen to what he has to say about the murderous Gaddafi in clip one.
The last time I sat with that brother, my brother, here's what I told him. I said, Brother Gaddafi, America will never forgive you for what you've done, and they'll come among you only to destroy you and the revolution that you have brought into being. He patted me on my leg as if to say, I know, brother. He didn't say a word. He just patted my leg. He didn't have no problem until he let them in. Ah!
So there he is. He's defending the dictator, Gaddafi, who's killing his own people with machine guns. And the astonishing wealth of Libyan tyrant Muammar Gaddafi has been opened up as countries around the world begin freezing billions of dollars worth of their stolen assets. The U.S. alone has seized $30 billion of Gaddafi's assets. Canada has frozen $2.4 billion. Austria, $1.7 billion. The U.S., the United Kingdom, $1 billion. This is the tip of the iceberg. There's much more, and this is a good friend of Louis Farrakhan, who's talking about Gaddafi as though Gaddafi is a victim of some Zionist American conspiracy. Can you believe this? Listen to clip two.
You want to bring Gaddafi before the International Criminal Court? What about Bush? What about Rumsfeld? What about a government that lied to the American people and caused the lives of hundreds of thousands to be lost?
Isn't that a great man? Isn't that a wonderful thing to have such a Gandhi-like man in our own midst? A Hitler in our own midst named Farrakhan. So that's the state of the world today. While all this is going on, Barack Obama's giving out awards to someone who wrote a book about a young man who couldn't control his masturbation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
How many young people have come to see the senseless cruelty of racism and the importance of standing up for what's right through the eyes of a girl named Scout? How many young people have learned to think by reading the exploits of Portnoy and his complaints?
So that's what the president's doing while we have a Hitler in our midst attacking Jews, Zionists, saying they're responsible for what's going on in Libya. Backing up Gaddafi is old Louis Farrakhan, and Obama has a golden opportunity to disassociate himself from from Farrakhan the way he was forced to do with Reverend Wright. But, of course, now that he's president, he doesn't have to disassociate himself from anybody. In fact, he could embrace Farrakhan as his brother. Farrakhan just embraced his brother, Gaddafi, in the speech we played. Apparently him and Farrakhan are good friends. What do you think of the president? Do you think that this man is out of touch with reality? Don't even call me on that. You're obsessed with Charlie Sheen, right? That's what you want to know about? What drugs he used and which hookers he was with? Because that's all that the people with the oral disorder of media are feeding you. Day and night, hooker, hooker, hooker. Hooker, hooker, hooker. Drug, drug, drug. Charlie Sheen. Hooker, hooker, hooker. Drug, drug, drug. That's all. Obama's complaint. Obama's complaint, characterized by irritable Bolshevik syndrome. Excessive absorption with his own ego. Suffers from a bleeding heart. Suffers from a dietary hypocrisy disorder. Suffers from an Oedipal government media complex. Suffers from an inability to focus on issues of national security. Suffers from a chronic dislike of men and fatigue syndrome. Farrakhan says Jews are pushing the U.S. into war. And he must attack Satan, he said. The Jews are Satan. Same dialogue, of Hitler, and the Jews say nothing. Not one word from the Jewish community. Again, they're nowhere to be seen. Nowhere. Where's the powerful Jews? Where are the powerful Jews of Hollywood? Where are they? If the Jews control Hollywood, why are they not saying anything? If the Jews control the media, why are they not saying anything? After all, Hitler's alive and well. Here he is. He's no longer in Iran. Now he's in Chicago. This is the most dangerous rhetoric I have read in my entire life since Hitler was killed in his bunker in 1945. One panel at Louis Farrakhan's conference was entitled The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, where it was claimed the Jews were disproportionately involved in the slave trade, and he accused them of controlling the media. Then he says, you may think I'm just got something out for the Jewish people, Farrakhan said. You're stupid. Farrakhan said, do you think I would waste my time if I did not think it was important for you to know Satan? My job is to pull the cover off of Satan so that he will never deceive you and the people of the world again. Where are the Jews of Hollywood? Where are the Jews of the media? Where are the Jews of the universities? Now that we see that Hitler is alive and well in Chicago and a good friend of Obama, no doubt, because Obama has not disavowed his relationship with Farrakhan, they live near each other. They work together as community organizers, my friends. But we try to warn you. You didn't want to believe us. You called us every name under the sun. We warned you who Obama was. We warned you, warned you, warned you. So there it is. Not one word about the Frankfurt shooting. Allah Akbar shoots two U.S. airmen to death on a bus in Frankfurt. Obama says nothing about the fact that it was a Muslim, whose people have been liberated, by the way, from the evil Christian Serbs. Quotes around the word evil. I guess you had it upside down. You had everything backwards then. I was the only one in the media who knew what was going on. I saw what was coming. Militants killed a Christian minister in Pakistan. The only Christian minister in Pakistan was executed in his car. But why do you care? You're interested in Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen, who was not so clean, but mean he beamed for all to glean. Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen, Charlie Sheen, Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen. Charlie Sheen. What is Charlie Sheen? What is Charlie's Sheen? What is Charlie Syndrome? Do you suffer Charlie's Syndrome, an obsession with hookers and drugs and actors and actresses? Are you suffering from Sheen Syndrome? America may be suffering from Sheen Syndrome owing to the government media complex that keeps feeding you the images of this bloated psychotic, this bloated drug addict. This is all you want to know about, while Obama has a complaint.
Savage.
Now, President Obama, if you allow the Zionists to push you to mount a military offensive against Gaddafi, then you go in and kill him as you did with Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. So let me ask you something, your literature. Are you as pessimistic as I am, given that we have a King Ludwig II in the White House? Who seems to be totally disconnected from reality. And we have all the demagogues popping up around America. We have the demagogues popping up around the world because they're not afraid of him. And take a look. Wait till you hear what you're going to hear next. I want you to hear Dr. Strangelove, our defense secretary, Gates. Listen to this short one.
I would note that the UN Security Council resolution provides no authorization for the use of armed force.
This is the man who's destroying the military as fast as he can. Where did Gates come from? It's as though he's what is he doing here? Every day the man keeps the military from doing what it was created to do. Every day he tells us it's not going to fight. They couldn't get the people out of Libya with a warship because he wouldn't let them use a warship for fear he would incite anger in Gaddafi. Instead, we rented a ferry from Greece. They had to wait on shore. The other nations got their people off with naval ships. Play Defense Secretary Gates again. Listen to this.
I would note that the UN Security Council resolution provides no authorization for the use of armed force.
No armed force. Only diversity training allowed in the Gates military. Now let's go back to Hitler, Farrakhan, who's repeating the same exact rhetoric of Hitler. Right here, right now, your time. All you brave liberals who said, oh, if I was around in Germany in the 30s and Hitler was around, oh, I would have joined the resistance. You would have joined the resistance? Isn't it interesting to me that 90% of Jews voted for Obama? Isn't it interesting that Obama, the anti-Semitic lunatic Farrakhan, and his black liberation theology Islamic followers and similar lunatic fringe groups are all brothers? And who is the mentor of Obama? Jeremiah Wright, who's good friends with Farrakhan, who in turn is now good friends with Gaddafi. U.S. Jews, 90% voted for the Democrat Party. Have you heard one politician today? Have you heard one Democrat, one Republican disavow what Farrakhan has said? I'll bet you haven't. I'll bet you haven't. You're liable to lose a vote. Now, you wouldn't expect it from politicians, but you'd expect it from a president that when Hitler arises in his own time, in his own country, since he's so interested in humanity and no racism, talks about racism every other day, Obama. And his racism coming from the pulpit, not far from his own home in Chicago, and he says nothing about it. And where's Secretary of State Hillary Clinton? Listen to clip five. You'll find out where she is.
We have joined the Libyan people in demanding that Colonel Gaddafi must go now without further violence and bloodshed. And we are working to translate the world's outrage into action and results. Marathon diplomacy at the United Nations and with our allies has yielded quick, aggressive steps to pressure and isolate Libya's leaders.
Oh, yeah. So there's Hillary Clinton. She's joined in solidarity with the Libyan people. She thinks she's speaking at a college pep rally. And marathon diplomacy at the UN, that means they put down the hookers and the champagne for a few minutes last night. And they discussed Libya in between the partying and the nightclubs, all of the diplomats in New York. They asked the hookers to leave the room for about 5 minutes so they could give up the Sheen lifestyle for 5 minutes. And then he'd say, what's it about? What is it? Wait, hold it a minute. Libya? Whatever. Right, just put my name on it. All right, whatever. And girls, come on back in. That's marathon diplomacy at the UN. That's their idea of marathon diplomacy. I guess all you can do is laugh at the insanity of this. I've never seen anything like this. I have never, ever lived through a president who's not there. It's like the man is not there. There's no president there. There's no there there. We've heard the phrase empty suit. This is beyond an empty suit. It's like a ghost in the White House. A ghost! The world is on fire. Now, either he wants it to burn, or he doesn't even care, one way or the other. Some would say he orchestrated the Middle East to go up. We talked about the Soros connection. We talked about Brzezinski. We talked about Carter. We talked about their either the foolishness to bring about democracy when we all knew that would never occur. We also talked about the profit motivation, betting up and against oil on the way up, on the way down, betting against currencies on the way up, on the way down. I told you yesterday that today mega capitalists have more power than the nation state. I told you that Rothschild 300-400 years ago said that give me control of a currency and I will control the nation. Soros to me is the, let us say, the dark side of Rothschild today, in my opinion. So you can accuse me of anything you want. I really don't care who you are, what you accuse me of, because it's one man's opinion. That's all it is. I have no power. After all, I'm not the president. He's the president. He's giving out an award to Philip Roth for having written Portnoy's complaint about a young man who did weird things with his body, couldn't control his impulses. Oh, I know there was more to it. We understand how deep literature is. We understand how porno is sold in America. You wrap it in some big, long sentences and paragraphs, and you call it literature when all it was porno in its time. It was a long porno novel. Actually, Philip Roth wrote better novels than Portnoy's Complaint, but it's odd to me that the president would note Portnoy's Complaint amongst all the works he wrote. I mean, the better book was Mr. Semler's Planet, which was about Mr. Semler being mugged by a black man in a hallway in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. It's funny that the president wouldn't refer to Mr. Semler's Planet, about a Holocaust survivor who crawled out of a death a grave in Poland. Everyone was dead over him and around him and under him. He crawled out from the dead, wound up in New York, had a little job, and he survived all that to be mugged in a hallway on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. That was Mr. Semler's Planet, written by Saul Bellow. But that's not the book that Obama chose to note. He talked about Philip Roth's first book that we know of called Portnoy's Complaint. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that very telling what kind of president we have in the White House? Well, I can't even say president. Chief executive. Can I could ask some questions. I guess there's no point in asking them. because most of you are distracted. At this point, you don't know what to do. Farrakhan says Jews are pushing the U.S. into war. Jews are pushing the U.S. into war. And we're a cover for Satan, all the Jews in America. That's what he said at his annual meeting near Chicago on Tuesday. Now, I agree we have freedom of speech in America, and I agree that he has the right to hate who he wants to hate. But I also agree that we have a president who has an obligation to speak out against such vile racist hatred. Not one word from Obama. Instead, celebrates a book about juvenile masturbation. So what would you like to talk about? Tell me what's on your mind on the Savage Nation. Let us begin in Sacramento, California, with Jeff. Fire away, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing, Michael? Michael, you there?
I don't answer how I'm doing if you know the show. You don't know me. I don't know you. It's not a call on Breaker One on a highway. Thanks for the call. That's because I didn't want to get mad. I would have blown a fuse. Okay, call screener Doug. Tell everybody never to ask me how I am. This is not a personal phone call. This is a national radio program. If you get lucky enough to get on the air, make your statement. Please don't ask me how I am. You don't know me. I don't know you. Okay? I know it's a colloquialism. It's a matter of speech. But we're not in a cafe right now. We have a world that's on fire because Obama and his gang have set the world on fire. And we have a government that I don't know what they're doing. Well, what are the Republicans doing? Where are what are the Tea Partiers having Earl Grey today or chamomile? Looks to me like today they're on passion flower and chamomile or catnip. They're not even on Earl Grey. Okay. Tennessee, Jubel, let's try you. You're up on the Savage. To turn their radio off. I'll take a break.
Savage.
So the news headlines, I mean, I don't know how to summarize them. We have an absentee president. We have a Hitler in Chicago named Farrakhan saying Zionists and Jews are Satan and are trying to get us into a war. We have a Muslim in Germany, a devout Muslim, who shot U.S. airmen, unarmed airmen. We have a defense secretary who says that our military is not going to use force in Libya. It gets crazier by the second. I mean, one after the other. There's only one bright note in the entire constellation of news I just found a minute ago. Tennessee lawmaker renews fight to make supporting Sharia law a felony in the United States. A Republican lawmaker in Tennessee, State Senator Bill Catron, will continue advocating proposed legislation that would make it a felony in the state of Tennessee to knowingly support Sharia law, despite criticism from the usual left-wing fools that the shocking bill is bigoted. State Senator Bill Catron, R. Murfreesboro, said the bill would be amended to allow the peaceful practice of Islam. He rejected calls to withdraw the legislation following a news conference on Tuesday held by several civil rights and interfaith groups denouncing his proposal. Catron said, "The bill does not outlaw or in any way punish or target the peaceful practice of Islam. It targets those terrorist Sharia organizations, those who are extremists. It has nothing to do with how they worship." So if the bill is passed, it would allow the state's attorney general to designate an entity as a Sharia organization if the organization knowingly adheres to Sharia, if the organization engages in or retains the capability and intent to engage in an act of terrorism, or if the act of terrorism of the organization threatens the security of public safety of Tennessee residents. But what is Sharia law? Well, according to his bill, Sharia is defined as, quote, "a set of rules, precepts, instructions, or edicts, which are said to emanate directly or indirectly from the God of Allah or the Prophet Muhammad, and which include directly or indirectly the encouragement of any person to support the abrogation, destruction, or violation of the United States or Tennessee constitutions, or the destruction of the national existence of the United States, or the sovereignty of this state, and which includes, among other methods, to achieve these ends, the likely use of imminent violence," close quote. So we have one man in the entire country with the guts to stand up for America. He was attacked immediately by Abraham Hooper, a spokesman for the questionable Council on American Islamic Relations. He was attacked immediately by the Anti-Defamation League. Isn't it interesting how the ADL joins radical Muslims? Isn't it strange how the ADL would join radical Muslims rather than joining him? ADL said, in general, we find this kind of legislation more about marginalizing the Muslim community rather than doing something to better protect the entire community. The ADL went on to say, I do worry that it feeds into a faulty perception that Muslims obey laws separate from U.S. and state law in Tennessee. Interesting, very interesting. Meanwhile, Herb London, president of the Hudson Institute, a conservative Washington-based think tank, said he found the legislation to be perfectly legitimate. He says it will eventually be passed. Here's what Herb said. He said, when Sharia law is incompatible with constitutional law, the Constitution of the United States should transcend Sharia. It is far more important than is the basis for our civilization. There's a growing understanding that Sharia is not compatible with the democratic principles we live by. This is not something we want to embrace in America. It's not compatible with our way of life. So now you liberals come to understand how you're committing your own suicide. But then again, I defined you years ago. You know you're mentally ill. You know it from the medications you take. You know it from the amount of therapy you engage in. I mean, well exemplified by Woody Allen with the therapy you have 4 or 5 times a week. You boast about your therapist and your therapy without realizing you're telling everybody that you're a neurotic lunatic. And yet you don't even understand that you're committing Harry Caray. You don't even understand you're committing social suicide by the way you vote for people who would bury you. People who would bury you. Rules that would kill you. You see this? Liberalism is a mental disorder. Every way you turn. Well, you don't have to turn any further than the White House celebrating Portnoy's complaint while the world's on fire. Would you like to talk on the Savage Nation? 2 rules. Don't ask me how I am. Just get right to the point, okay? You ready for it? Florida, John Line 4, you're on the Savage Nation.
Savage, you made exactly the right point about the shooting in Germany. This guy was a Muslim from Kosovo. How many Muslims did we supposedly save from being slaughtered in Serbia? And this is the thanks we get. He murders 2 of our service personnel, could have killed many more.
Well, that was the biggest lie in history, by the way. It was a lie put forward by Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Javier Solana of the United Nations. It was the greatest lie of our century. It's one of the top 10 lies of the century. It was the Serbs who were being forced off their land, their ancestral land in Kosovo, by Muslims. And we took the side of the Muslim terrorists. And we drove the Serbs out of Kosovo, which has been a part of Serbia since the 1300s. Do you know that or don't you?
Listen, I've been hearing you pound on this for years now. You're absolutely right. I wanted to connect this to what's going on in Libya. Now, we have people who are urging us to take military action in Libya. I am personally opposed to any sort of military action for a simple reason. The Libyan people are not our friends, okay? We're not going to win their goodwill by helping them out any more than we won the goodwill of this SOB in Germany by saving the good Muslims in Kosovo. The fact is...
Okay, I understand that thinking. Well, let's go back in time. Remember when Ronald Reagan was president and Gaddafi was kicking up his heels? He moved an aircraft carrier into the Gulf of Tripoli. He launched, I think it was F-15s, and they fired rockets into Gaddafi's tent. Do you remember that? Gaddafi was quiet for 10 years. Remember that incident?
Daughter, yes.
I think they launched them off. I don't remember the name of the aircraft carrier. It could have been the Kitty Hawk. That's when we had a president who had world vision. That's when we had a president who was a commander-in-chief as opposed to a clown. And I don't mean to insult clowns.
But listen, Gaddafi is a bit smarter than Louis Farrakhan, okay, that freak. I hope he's listening. I wish he was. Gaddafi knows who's after him, okay? He knows that it's the Islamists who are driving this revolution, all right?
Correct. It's Al-Qaeda wants him overthrown because they'd like to take over Libya and its oil wealth. So why is he blaming, why is Farrakhan blaming the Jews?
Listen, it's not even just Al-Qaeda. Last week, Sheikh Karadawi, who is like the big muckety-muck for the Muslim Brotherhood. He's the guy they all run to interpret their beloved Sharia law. He issued a fatwa calling for the assassination of Gaddafi. So it's not the Jews that Gaddafi's worried about. It's not the United States.
But wait. I understand all of that. But why is Farrakhan chiming in and attacking Jews if he knows this?
Please. Farrakhan, as you say, is the Hitler of our time, the Hitler of the United States. All right, of course he's going to attack the Jews. What else is he going to do?
If, why is Obama not attacking Farrakhan for these racist remarks?
Pointed out.
Farrakhan has a very large organization. Very large organization of black Muslims.
Organization.
Why is Obama not disavowing what Farrakhan just said?
Farrakhan has a very large organization, which, by the way, has also been infiltrated by the Muslim Brotherhood. Obama is not attacking Farrakhan for the simple reason, as you pointed out, that he's now the president. He doesn't have to. Okay, maybe during the campaign, sure, but that's over with. He doesn't have to do anything now.
Well, he's going to run again, isn't he? You think Obama might not even run again?
You know what? Honestly, I'm not afraid of Obama running again. Everybody's so terrified of him. I'm not afraid.
I'm not afraid of it either. I think he's tired of the presidency. I think he wants to quit right now.
I think he's finished.
Honestly, I think this guy could walk away from the job. I think it's too big for him. You know, he had a lot of fun in the beginning, but I think he tried the shoes on and they don't fit.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
He could easily step down. He could be the first president in American history who quits.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be fine with me.
Well, I'd rather have Biden in the White House right now. I'd feel a little safer, even though Biden's a little bizarre. I think that would give us some sense of stability if Obama were to resign.
Biden, at least you know who he is, all right? He's a charlatan. He's crooked. At least you can figure. At least the average American can figure him out. Obama is a cipher. He's still a cipher to most Americans.
He's a mote in the mire. Look that one up. It's the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Tennessee lawmaker renews fight to make supporting Sharia law a felony in the U.S. Is he right or wrong? Nixon quit. Why can't Obama quit? Nixon quit. Why can't Obama quit? Nixon quit. Why can't Obama quit?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam. I am.
Would you like them in a house? Would you like them with a mouse?
I do not like them in a house. I do not like them with a mouse. I do not like them here or there. I do not like them
anywhere.
Now, President Obama, if you allow the Zionists to push you to mount a military offensive against Gaddafi, and you go in and kill him, as you did with Saddam Hussein.
Roll out the barrel, we'll have a barrel of fun.
Party on! It's the Obama years!
We got the pills on the run.
Nero fiddled while Rome burned. It's hard to find the single word that defines the empty suit in the White House. And here's a new story about what he's doing in the White House. Nothing about Libya, nothing about the Hitler in Chicago, nothing about anything, but he's giving out awards to people who wrote Portnoy's Complaint, children's books. Obama White House to brew more beer. Caught the attention of several White House watchers that homemade beer was served at the White House Super Bowl party in February. Beverages poured during the party included the following beers. And they're using, to show you how organic they are, they're using honey that was raised at the White House itself. Honey from the White House beehive was used to make the first batch of homemade ale. Would the First Lady ever consider growing hops in her vegetable garden? Believe me, I've thought about it, said White House Assistant Chef Sam Koss. It has definitely crossed my mind. So this is a definite advancement to the presidency. They're brewing beer in the White House. Now, it sounds like a frat boy like a frat party. Parties every night, brewing beer. Remember with Carter, I mean, if you were to name some brews that they make in the White House, Obama's brews. With Jimmy Carter, we saw Billy Beer. I guess with Obama, we can name it Silly Beer. Or some other names for the home brews could be Bolshy Brew. Or how about Leftist Lager? One at Lenin's Choice. Or perhaps Carl's Hefeweizen would be a big hit over there for the next Super Bowl party. Or if that's a little too esoteric, since the White House is now brewing beer, they can put one out called Barry's Brew. Or Ayer's Ale. How about that? A little Ayer's Ale? And finally, I could suggest another title for them, another label. Reverend Wright's Light. That would work. So we're trying to lighten it up a bit here because the news is so dismal. It's beyond belief. Obama has another party today, awarding the National Medal of Arts and the National Humanities Medal. Very, very noble of him. And he's very concerned about racism, as we all are. Very concerned about hate, as we all are. And here it is right under his nose, and he says nothing about it. So what would you like to talk about? The two American servicemen executed in Frankfurt by a devout Muslim? Devout Muslim in Frankfurt, Germany? Not a word from Obama about the Muslim connection? He just regretted the death of the servicemen? How do you feel about that one? Kansas City, Doug, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'm just overwhelmed with grief at the loss of two more heroes in the shadow of Fort Hood, knowing nothing will be changed, nothing will be done about it. And you know how smart you have to be a team pirate. These were the best of the best. And think how proud their parents were, and these guys are gone, unarmed.
That's right. Well, they're just statistics to the president. The bigger issue is that they were killed by a devout Muslim from Kosovo, whose brethren were allegedly liberated from the allegedly hostile Serbs. That's the real irony of this whole story.
But you remember the rage you felt when the 13 and 4, these people fought a war and came home, survived that, to be killed by one of their supposedly own, and nothing's been changed. They're still unarmed.
That's right. Well, after Fort Hood, I think that they should disarm the entire military, even on the battlefield. Since so many of the soldiers are on medications, they're liable to hurt themselves. Since the new military under Gates and the whatever his name is, the one with the great voice, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, since so many soldiers are on so many drugs, I think there's a good reason to disarm them even on the battlefield because they're liable to hurt themselves. That's the new military under Obama. New York, WOR, Pat, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
You know, Michael, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said about a half an hour ago about Obama. You said he's not there. Every psycho talking head is trying to slice him and dice him and figure out what kind of personality he is. And I think we just got to take him for who he is and what he says. He's lawless, he's recalcitrant, and he's indifferent, okay? And I don't think he'll run again because life will be much better later on than it is in the White House. I mean,
well, think of the corporate jobs that he and the First Lady could get after this.
Two people elevated both to their level of incompetence. I mean, it's going to be a rope-a-dope between now and the next election.
But the world is burning. We don't have 2 years to wait. There's nobody there. We don't have 2 years to wait. There has to be a national outcry for Obama to resign and for Biden to take over. He has to step down. He's incompetent.
I happen to agree with that, but let me finish what I want.
There has to be a national campaign not to impeach him, but to make him resign and to put Biden in. We didn't say hold another election. We didn't say put a Republican in. We said put Biden in, get rid of the man who was not there. He has to resign for the sake of America. He's over his head. He cannot do this job. It's the toughest job on earth, and he's obviously not up to it. They're brewing beer in the White House. Could you believe that story, Pat?
Michael, all I can do is laugh in desperation. But what I'm also trying to make another point based upon what I heard you ask a prior caller. Think about at Fort Hood what he did when he came out to make a speech. It took him 2 minutes. After giving high fives, this is what I mean about this guy being indifferent and off. He was given high fives before he could even observe the dead. I mean, it infuriates me.
Wait, who was giving high fives to whom?
Obama.
High fives to who?
To who was in the audience. He was acknowledging.
Oh, you mean he thought it was a campaign rally, the Fort Hood, at the Fort Hood massacre announcement? He thought it was a campaign rally?
You can go back and check the tapes. It was either 2-3 minutes, him doing high fives.
Well, you know what? We all know Obama's incompetent and dangerous. I wrote a whole book on it. There have been about 5 books since then about his danger. So what do we do now? We all know he's dangerous. We all know he's a socialist. We all know he's a puppet of very powerful money changers. So what do we do now?
I speak slowly. I'm sorry, because I had neck surgery a few years ago. I don't talk fast. I try.
All right, but what's your point?
My point is, you asked a prior caller, why won't he come out against Farrakhan? And I find that very interesting that Farrakhan, the bedbug, and his penchant for number 19 would be coming out right now. Obama said in his own book, in his own words, as I'm trying to say, take the man for what he says. Don't analyze him. He said, if the landscape in America gets ugly with respect to the Muslims, I'll stand with them. Isn't it interesting that tomorrow this British imam who's a lawyer, British-born, I think it's tomorrow, either Thursday or the following Thursday, is going to march on Washington for Sharia law in the United States? I want to see how the president is going to react.
Where's the National Organization for Women on Sharia law? Where are the gay groups on Sharia law? How come they're not counter-marching?
What you're saying.
Why are they silent? That's the question. Why are they silent? 1-800-449-8255. It's the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam. I am.
Would you like them in a house? Would you like them with a mouse?
I do not like them in a house. I do not like them with a mouse. I do not like them here or there. I do not like them
anywhere.
Green Eggs and Ham by Dr. Seuss, brewing beer in the White House. Farrakhan says Jews are pushing U.S. into war, and the president is nowhere to be found. Where's Waldo? The question I kept asking about Bush, who was on vacation. But by comparison, George Bush was George Washington compared to this one. I look back, and it seems that each president is so much worse than the one before them, you don't know how it happens. Remember how bad Clinton was? You say, horrible. Then the one after him was worse than Clinton. Then the one after, it just gets worse. It doesn't get better. So here we are. Forbes says Obama is Carter. And we wake up, in a way, it's a strange irony that they're brewing beer in the White House. With Carter, we had Billy Beer. Now with Obama, look at the beers we're going to have, as I said. I read the list before. Silly Beer, Bolshie Beer, Leftist Lager, Lenin's Choice, Carl's Hepfeiser, Barry's Brew, Ayers Ale and Reverend Wright's Light. Very funny. Very, very funny. Very funny indeed. Not one word today from a Republican or a Democrat about a lack of help for those in Libya. And there is an interesting point, though. Well, who cares about them? It's all about the oil anyway. I mean, what, you want to topple Gaddafi and see Al-Qaeda come in? Which devil do you want to do business with? The devil you know or the devil you don't know? We told you that Soros' toppling of regimes in the Middle East would bring about, the Muslim Brotherhood and fanatics that would make the dictators look like a benevolent by comparison. And, of course, we were 100% right. So you don't know what to do at the end of the day, but you think a president would articulate some of it for you. New York, Al, you're on the Savage Nation from WOR. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, it's an honor and pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
My nephew, Benjamin, is 23 years old. He's a second lieutenant, United States Marines, and he will be rotated onto the USS Kearsarge, the amphibious assault ship in the Mediterranean. And
Has he been given any weapons training or just psychiatric pills?
No, Dr. Sir, extensive weapons training.
I'm shocked. You mean under Secretary Gates, they're allowed to learn how to fire a rifle?
Yes. I just wish that we had a president that had, you know, some steel in him. I don't want to say anything bad on the air, but you know what I'm saying.
No, of course. He has steel. He has steel against conservatives. Plenty of steel for that. He has a real steel in his spine against Republicans and conservatives. Don't underestimate him. He has steely resolve when it comes to America. Believe me. Steely resolve when it comes to overturning the Republic's founding principles. Believe me, he has steely resolve.
You know, Dr. Savage, I heard him in that press release about the shooting in Frankfurt. Not a mention, like you said, of the person who did it. Not a mention.
No. It's as though they were killed by spontaneous combustion. The guns just went off on the bus.
But
He didn't say fanatic Orthodox Muslim. He didn't say devout Muslim. But that's germane to the point. I have nothing against Muslims who are peace-loving and want to live in America amongst other religions and have a live-and-let-live policy. But I have a real problem with people who come here and want to take the country over and convert it to some throwback 500-year-ago law.
I'm six blocks from the mosque in Flushing where that guy wanted to blow up the subway. You know, right here where I live, so.
What do you mean? He came from that mosque?
He came from the mosque on 33rd Avenue, right by Union Street. Right.
Where did he get the hate from? Who taught him the hatred? Where did he learn it? In the mosque? Where did he get it from? Where are they getting these messages from? That's what I want to know. If not in these mosques, tell me. Let's ask the question. Where are they getting these fanatical messages from?
And why can't the FBI be monitored?
Why? Because they were sued by the ACLU for doing exactly that in Southern California. Immediately, they were sued by the ACLU. Now, figure that one out. How many very wealthy Jewish people support the ACLU? Now, I have to keep bringing it back to the Jews because the Jews are being attacked now by Muslims around the world. Farrakhan is attacking Jews. And Jews continue to support the ACLU and Obama. Can you figure that one out?
No.
Yeah, I can figure it out. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Run it up the flag and get back to me. Arkansas, Steve, you're up on the Savage Nation.
The word that you were searching for is psychopath, Michael. All these world leaders are psychopaths. That's the one thing
In what regard are you using that word?
In the regard that they do not care about anything, anybody. Now, they have their different political and religious philosophies.
All right, so you're saying what? They only want power? What's new about that? But we've had leaders who wanted power, but they also understood how to run a nation. They were there. This man's not there.
It's
as though he is not there.
Well, whatever's being done by him and his handlers are being done on purpose, and it's a matter of power. And only psychopaths seek power in the world, usually. We need Americans, whether they're Republican or Democrat, we need Americans to stand up for our Constitution and say...
Well, we know all of that, but what we need is someone in the Republican Party to condemn Farrakhan today and condemn the president for not condemning Farrakhan today. Let's bring it down to specifics. We have a Hitler emerging in the United States who says the Jews are pushing the U.S. into war. How in the world can this be going on? It's the Holocaust all over again. You know, the Holocaust didn't happen overnight. It started with hateful rhetoric like this. It started with hate speeches by Hitler and the Nazis. Do you understand things don't happen overnight? It starts with hate speeches like this. And little by little, they grow. Little by little, they grow. And when no one says anything, they get more bold. And the reason all of the demagogues are coming out of the woodwork is because we have either a weak president, a non-existent president, or a complicit president. Take your choice. Whichever side of the spectrum you're on, take your choice.
Savage.
I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam, I am.
Would you like them in a house? Would you like them with a mouse?
I do not like them in a house. I do not like them with a mouse. I do not like them here.
All right, we got the picture. So today the Obamas are awarding the National Medal of Arts and National Humanities Medal to all well-known fanatic leftists, including Dr. Seuss, whose real name was Theodore Geisel. Theodore Geisel actually was a Stalinist. You don't know that about Dr. Seuss. You think he just wrote children's books. He was a brainwasher. He was a cartoonist. And his cartoons were, of course, playing down the threat of communism. And he said the greater threat was in the D's committee and those who threatened to cut America's, quote, lifeline to Stalin and Soviet Russia, who Dr. Seuss said were the ones carrying our warload. So the next time you buy a book for your child and you think you're buying something simple and innocent because Michelle Obama read from Green Eggs and Ham, understand that Geisel's cartoons were fundamentally communist in orientation. Doesn't mean he was a bad fellow. I'm sure he was a very talented, creative man. But he was a communist and a Stalinist. Very interesting, isn't it? Well, there, you didn't know that. Dave in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, pleasure, Dr. Savage, always to talk to you. You stole my thunder, but that's what I was calling in about. That guy, I read a book on that guy and saw some good documentaries on him. That guy was one of the biggest communist Stalinists. That guy screwed up more heads in the 50s and 60s.
Who, you mean Dr. Seuss? Well, that's why he was awarded a prize today by Michelle Obama. I mean, he's that kind of guy.
Yeah, thank God I never read any of his stuff or whatever. That guy screwed up more heads in the 60s than probably.
Well, there was Dr. Seuss, and then there was the other one. Remember the other one? They're all complete leftist fanatics.
Listen to this stuff. The stuff is just drivel. I mean, what is
it? Yeah, it's drivel. Why would you read that to a child? You don't want to hang me, a mouse? Why would you read that to a child?
Dr. Savage, I got something serious to talk about. How about this? This is what's pissing me off. Why are the Chinese buying all our crab?
Crab?
The Chinese are buying all our crab, driving our crab prices up out here in the Bay Area, out in San Francisco.
Well, it's good to hear the Chinese don't have crabs and they need to get ours. I mean, that's one good note. They don't suffer the malady. But the fact is, what's wrong with anyone buying the crabs?
No, I don't mind a little bit, but I think they're going to come in and drive all our prices up, and we won't be able to...
Oh, you think they're trying to take over the industry?
Yeah, in a way, yeah. I mean, all our...
I really don't know anything about crabs, to be honest with you. It's a topic I've kind of stopped thinking about for about 30 years now.
I've been listening to you for a long since the beginning. I know you don't like shellfish too much, but...
No, we're going to go from communist to shellfish. I sort of see the relationship between mollusks and communists. I get it.
The thing about you, Doc, I ran into you once on a bike, and we almost went colliding head over tea kettles.
Where was that, Dave?
It was, you know, the elephant trees in the park there in San Francisco?
Elephant trees? What elephant trees?
They call them elephant trees when they're cut. What are they called?
But wait, which park in San Francisco?
It was near the... what's it called? In Golden Gate Park near where they all gather in the summer to listen to music.
Are you sure it was me? Because I don't think I've ever bicycled there unless it was, what, 25 years ago?
Yeah, it was about 20 years ago. I think you had a blue
bike. Oh, before radio. It was pre-radio.
You had a blue bike.
It's possible. God only knows. Thanks for remembering. New York, WOR, Ferris, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
You're right, Doc. He does serve at the pleasure of the money changers and the bankers. So the fact that he's sick and tired of it doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, this may explain his radical behavior in office in order to get impeached. You know, Newt Gingrich called him out for impeachment. He's the first major political force.
Well, Gingrich was just trying to make some noise to get attention to run for office. Gingrich is unelectable. I pray to God Gingrich does the right thing and doesn't run, because he'll destroy the chances for the Republicans to win it all. Gingrich is a lifetime Beltway Republican. Don't make any mistake about it. He's a complete organization man. He's part of the Republican Party. He's part of the problem, not part of the solution, in my estimation. Okay? New York, WOR, Donald, and I don't mean Trump. What's on your mind, Donald?
Obama has such a high ego, he wouldn't even consider... resignation, unlike Nixon, who actually knew that the senators, 85 senators, would have thrown Nixon out, so he resigned and stated he resigned for the betterment of the country.
You mean because he cared about the country? Nixon cared about the country.
So he resigned, even though it was in disgrace, he resigned. And Obama's ego is much...
Well, no, this is reaching a point, though, of egregious behavior, what Obama's doing. The world is on fire, and this man's partying and brewing beer in the White House.
Yes.
I mean, even liberals who want him to get behind their mandates are saying he's the non-existent president. They're saying, where's Waldo about him? They copied my line about Bush. Terrific. I'm glad. But the fact is that he's disconnected. Everybody can see this.
If I can
what's with these parties every other night? What in the world is going on? The world's on fire. It would be appropriate for him to not give out awards, to have someone below himself give out these awards and say, I have important things to do. I'm not going to give out an award for a book on by Dr. Seuss.
What's his name? Theodore Geisel. I heard you mention that earlier. Could I make one comment about the Republican nominee? And
you can say what you like, of course.
I personally believe it's Mitt Romney's nomination to win. If he wants it, he'll get it. He may not win the presidency.
Well, as we discussed yesterday on the show, Romney has terrible baggage in that he supported RomneyCare, which is was the model for Obamacare, incidentally. I'm sorry. The Democrats would go after him on that, and there's almost no defense. How would he defend against that?
I don't think he would probably run away from it. I don't think he can defend it. But
Okay. So what does he say? He's the one who put it into Massachusetts. It's a disaster in Massachusetts, he was the architect of it. So if you're against socialized medicine, how do you elect Romney?
How about the senator from Texas, Jim DeMint? South Carolina, rather. Jim DeMint?
I like Jim DeMint. I said that I back him 100%. He's not electable. He doesn't have the charisma for the office. I don't think he could win at all. I think we need a charismatic, almost buccaneer type of personality to win the presidency against Obama. We need somebody with a real tremendous high voltage Hollywood type of charisma, and I don't see it on the Republican side. Do you?
Neither did he. George Bush. I don't think he had charisma at all, but he was.
No, he didn't. He didn't. He didn't have it. But people were fed up with Clinton, and yeah. Obama's only will have been in office for 4 years. We don't know what state the world is going to be 2 years from now. At the rate we're going, it's hard to predict what will be left for us to even vote for. The currency is threatened. By the way, do you know that the currency itself is threatened? Donald, have you been reading the reports that there are actual moves behind the scenes to debase and devalue the U.S. dollar? That they actually want to weaken the dollar, destroy the dollar, break the dollar? That the Obama administration is trying to destroy the dollar with help from Soros in order to bring about a complete and total collapse of the currency in this country? I am not making this up. Some great experts are writing about this. Are you aware of any of this, Donald?
I'm aware of it, and the paper in my wallet won't mean a damn thing, will it?
Everybody fears the Weimar Republic, where wheelbarrows of cash where it was necessary to buy a loaf of bread. Everyone fears it. Why are they printing money like this when every country on earth is telling them to stop? Why would he be doing it other than to purposely destroy the dollar by generating inflation and making the dollar less valuable? Why would he be doing this? It's fiscal insanity. There's nothing the man is doing that's right. Nothing. He's doing nothing correct. I don't care that he's a Democrat. I don't care. I'm an independent. Doesn't matter to me, Democrat or Republican. The man is doing everything wrong. I don't know one thing he has done that's correct for the sake of the American Republic. Not one thing that I can figure out. Dave in Nevada, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, one thing that I totally I see here. I wonder what Joseph McCarthy would think right now, wherever he is.
Well, we know Joseph McCarthy was given a bad name, but it turns out that he was 100% right about the infiltration of Hollywood and the upper echelons of government by well-known communists. He was smeared, though, by communists inside the government. Joseph McCarthy was number one a war hero. You know that, don't you?
Absolutely.
And he was. You want to see how the Alinsky School works? They took a man who came back from World War II as a tail gunner, a heroic tail gunner. I believe he was a tail gunner in a B-17. And instead of turning that into a heroic act, which it was, they mocked him, called him Tail Gunner Joe, in order to make a mockery of his heroism. That's number one. And then, when he was talking about communists in Hollywood, communists in the government, Instead of saying, you know, the guy is right, they made him into the problem. In fact, years later, it turned out, and the reason I'm citing a reference right now, the Venona Papers, V-E-N-O-N-A, they are documents that were released over 10 years ago by ex-Soviet officials who confirmed that in the 1950s, when McCarthy was screaming about communists in Hollywood, he was 100% right. Have you heard that recently? No, because the media doesn't want you to know that McCarthy was actually a war, not only a war hero, but he was also an American visionary. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back. You know how many times I've used the phrase red diaper dopa baby to explain the problem that America's having today because of so many communist children who went on to using marijuana that they became totally psychotic. And I wasn't doing it in jest. I used the phrase RDDBs for years. I stopped using it. I think I should start referring to it again. I believe what we're seeing in America today, particularly in the Democrat Party, is the ascent of the RDDBs. Here's a study just came out, published in a major journal, which confirms what I've been saying to you for over 15 years. Cannabis doubles risk of psychotic episodes. Using cannabis in one's youth almost doubles the risk of having psychotic episodes like paranoia and hallucinations, a study has found. A team of international researchers followed the lives of almost 2,000 young Germans who began with no history of psychosis for more than a decade. They discovered that youngsters who started smoking the drug at college age were 90% more likely to have psychotic symptoms in their mid-20s. It's an amazing story, and I've told you this over and over and over again. The scientists believe that exposure to THC, the main psychoactive component in cannabis, makes the brain more susceptible to psychotic episodes. And now what's amazing is that we've known this for years in science, but cannabis is now being pushed as though it's mother's milk. Cannabis clubs, pot clubs, medical marijuana, it's all a giant conspiracy to completely make the dumb even dumber. Why do you think it's called dope dope? Hey, dope, why do you think they call it dope dope? You think it makes you smarter? You think it makes you think better? Thinks you makes you more competitive? It makes you more easily manipulated, dope. This study adds a further brick to the wall of evidence showing that use of traditional cannabis is a contributory cause of psychosis like schizophrenia, said Sir Robin Murray, professor of psychiatric research at King's College London. And yet, pot clubs abound. America is flowing in the lies and the propaganda of marijuana. And I'm sorry to tell you who was behind it, because you're not going to want to hear it. Because I had an argument with one of his henchmen 7 or 8 years ago. George Soros has been pushing the legalization of marijuana for well over 10 years through his, I think, Open Society Institute or something to that effect. I believe Soros is one of the most demonically evil men in the history of the world. That's my personal opinion. Wherever you see something evil and wrong going on, you can see one of his front groups behind it. Media Matters, funded by Soros, attacked me, falsely accused me, took my comments out of context, and got me banned in Britain. Open Society or whatever society has been pushing a legalization of marijuana, first in Arizona, then in California. I had an argument with one of them on the telephone years ago. Again, George Soros. We know that marijuana is highly dangerous. And yet the young people don't know this. They think that it's just something like a beer. It isn't like a beer. It is not like a beer at all. It's extremely dangerous. Try to tell your children that if they don't believe you, the marijuana smoke itself has more carcinogens in it than tobacco smoke does. Are you aware of that? Again, you don't want to understand this. Oh, it's green. It's something natural. Curare is natural also. I can name 10 natural substances that can kill you. What does natural have to do with it? You thinking because it's natural, it's healthy? If it's natural, it can kill you as well. There are a lot of potent compounds in nature that are toxic. Marijuana is a toxic compound, extremely toxic. It explains to a great extent why the left wing is pushing medical marijuana, because it makes the people putty in their hands. Putty. If they're doped up on marijuana, if they're doped up on skunk, they can manipulate them like Nutty Putty. Cannabis is a risk factor for psychosis and recommends a cautious and thoughtful approach to cannabis legislation coming out of England, of all places. Cannabis doubles risk of psychotic episode. Major study. I don't think you'll be hearing much about it because the marijuana lobby right now in America is overwhelmingly powerful. Now back to the news of the day on the Savage Nation. Again, before you leave this hour, please go to michaelsavage.com and put your name on the petition list. We're at 80,000 names of those who are trying to get my name off the list. If you've signed the list, my birthday is coming up on March 31st of this month, and I will be 69 years old. I don't need to hide it. I guess you should be proud of having made it this long and still be intelligent and functional, but I want to hide it, make believe I'm 40. I will be 69 years old. My father died at 57, my grandfather at 47, my great-grandfather at 47. And so, therefore, each day is a miracle for me. And each day I get up and I struggle against my own problems, physical, to get on the radio because I think it's important to do so. And we're going to be sending you an email about how you can help me with the UK scandal. That's all. That's simple. New York, WOR, Joe, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'm actually out of Boston. My question to you is, why should we help Libya and Egypt? I mean, as you said earlier in the show, when we helped the Muslims in Serbia, they just turn around and they hate us anyway, no matter what.
Yes, they hate us anyway. That's correct. It's like this, one of the greatest scandals in the history of the world, to have so much about it. Even after a shooting, their front groups attack you for pointing out the obvious.
For the earthquake and the tsunami, and they're wearing God Love Obama T-shirts over there.
Yeah. Oh, you mean Well, it's a good question in Libya, because Al Qaeda actually wants Gaddafi overturned. Overthrown. Do you know that?
I do, but I mean, it's almost like.
In that way, you could argue that we should support Gaddafi.
That's what I'm saying. Why would we?
Maybe we should send men in to defend Gaddafi, so we can make another $100 billion.
Situation.
We're a lose-lose. There's no way you can win here with these people. Impossible. You got a madhouse. The only solution is to drill, and bankrupt these Arabs with oil. How's that? Does that work for you? Drill nuclear energy, drill offshore, drill onshore, slant drill in Alaska, drill, and bankrupt the Arabs and let them eat their oil and swim in it. How's that? The only solution. Drill yesterday, drill today, and drill tomorrow. Drill yesterday, drill today, and drill tomorrow. Drill. Get those rigs going again in the Gulf of Mexico. Obama destroyed the American oil industry, the drilling industry in the Gulf of Mexico. He still has not authorized the reinstitution of drilling. And by the way, you don't know this again because the media is complicit again with this conspiracy. But at the same time, American drillers have been prohibited from drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. All the foreign nations that were drilling are still drilling. They were not stopped for a single day. Can you figure that one out?
No.
Can you answer that question? Obama wants us to not want to use oil. He wants the cost of gasoline to be so prohibitive that we use Nancy Pelosi's green energy. And if you think $10 a gallon gas is too high, wait until you see what Pelosi's energy is going to cost you. Wait until you see what the cost is going to be of so-called green energy. The biggest lie in the history of the energy world is so-called green energy at this time. And believe me, all my life I've dreamed of solar energy. I would love to see solar cars. I like to see hydrogen cars. But we're probably 20 to 50 years away from it. Drill.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen up. Okay, what's going on in the world? What's going on in the world? Well, let's see. We have a Hitler in our midst. His name is Louis Farrakhan. Just like Hitler's rhetoric led to the gas chambers, let's pray that we've learned from history and Farrakhan will soon be stopped by the U.S. government. Yes, sure, it's likely to happen. He says Jews are pushing the U.S. into war. Jews are Satan. This is in Chicago in a mosque. This is under the nose of Barack Obama. But then again, excuse me, isn't Obama and Farrakhan isn't there a triumvirate of Obama, Farrakhan, and Gaddafi? They're all good friends, aren't they? Read the report. It's on michaelsavage.com. Oil's going through the roof after the vicious Libyan vermin, Gaddafi, used airplanes against his own people. Forbes magazine says Obama is Carter. Gold hits a new high. Two U.S. airmen were killed by an Albanian Muslim at an airport in Germany. The Muslim shouted Allah Akbar before shooting. These are the same Albanian Muslims that were liberated by Bill Clinton and the socialists from Europe, thinking they'd be buying favors. You know where that was, how'd that work out? 180,000 Libyan refugees pouring into Tunisia and Egypt. I wonder how many of them will be brought here on the U.S. Navy ships. Instead of the U.S. Navy being used to kill Gaddafi, they'll be used to transport more asylum refugees. You think so? What else is going on in the world? Well, let's go to michaelsavage.com because there's an awful lot going on that I haven't touched on yet. On the top left, we see the headline story. Farrakhan says Jews are pushing the U.S. into war. The Nation of Islam leader, Hitler, says his comments on Jews are meant to pull the cover off Satan and Zionists dominate the U.S. government and banks. This is all under Barack Obama. It's all coming out. Savage offers antidote to Obama in trickle-up poverty. See Selwyn Duke's review. It's amazing. By the way, remember that slimy pile of garbage, John Murtha, who called our war heroes Nazis and fascists? The U.S. Navy under Obama is going to name a warship in his honor. This is the same vermin, Murtha, who said Marines had murdered Iraqi civilians. All of them have been freed except one on these false charges. 1-800-449-8255. Eric Holder, our Attorney General, says Black Panther case focus demeans my people, meaning black people. Apparently, he's not the Attorney General for all Americans. He's the Attorney General for his people. Gunmen kill Christian cabinet minister in Pakistan. They didn't want even one Christian in a Muslim country. Muslim Brotherhood sees opportunity in Jordan. And you thought there'd be democracy, you foolish, foolish boy. 1-800-449-8255. Do tyrants fear America anymore? Of course not. We have one in the White House. What's there to fear? And what are the Muslims doing over there in the Pashtun area? They're recreating suicide bombings on their own playground. Pashtun children are recreating a terrorist attack with one boy dressed in black, the bomber, being embraced and wished well by his friends. Maybe you want to bring more of them in for diversity training. And what's the American media talking about? Old Charlie Sheen. That's the biggest story of the day to them. Can you imagine that? I wrote a little poem about him. Charlie Sheen was not so clean, but mean he beamed for all to glean. That's all I'm going to say on Charlie Sheen. It's all on michaelsavage.com. Don't miss any of it today. Now, I want to read an article, Elephants and Teenagers. I'll summarize it. Something familiar happened, eerily familiar happened in Africa recently. Adult elephants were taken away and the orphan youngsters were left to fend for themselves. The youngster started the path to sexual maturity. The young boy elephants were going into lengthy musts, as a dog would go into heat much longer than a normal elephant in a normal setting. The boys ganged together. They started raping and killing white rhinos, an endangered species. They were displaying extreme aggression. The park authorities were very concerned. Someone had the idea to bring in 10 adult bulls to straighten out the gang of elephant thugs. Sure enough, the mature male elephants put the band of so-called delinquent juveniles in their place. The adults were reintroduced and life turned back to normal. No more killings, the elephants and rhinos were at peace again. Obviously, strong male and female presences are needed in these elephants' lives. The young elephants needed the adults from when they were defenseless babies through the time they were in their elephant teenage years. In the meantime, over in the United States of America, there was another gang-related murder in your city. Another fatherless, semi- or fully orphaned teenager shot a man and then reported back to his or her gang of delinquent juveniles. Perhaps we should take a lesson from the elephants. Very well written. summarize it all, summarizes it quite well. And what's the answer to this question? I don't have an instant answer. The government's not going to say, well, what's the answer? There's no single answer. Discussing it is the beginning of an answer. Talking about it, it makes thoughts. You know, I once compared talk radio when I got started 16, 17 years ago. God, March 21st will be how long? 1994, whatever, 17 years already. It's my fifth career in my life. This is not my first career. I had many other successful careers. This has been my most successful. And maybe there'll be another one after this. I don't know what it'll be, but I'm not giving up so fast. But anyway, when I first started, I compared talk radio to throwing a stone into a calm pond and watching the rivulets that emanate from that stone in the calm pond. In other words, I throw ideas out, then you call in, and we reverberate back and forth, and these ideas spread through society. This is a form of influencing society. Talk radio at its best is a way of influencing society. But when you think about it, movies are far more influential than talk radio. Look at what it's done to America. Again, I want to go back to an image I remember. In the 1980s, my children were very young. I remember going to the movies. Every movie poster, without exception, in the early 1980s, showed a Hollywood starlet or a Hollywood actor with a pistol in his hand. All the white actors held a gun in their hand, all the anti-gun advocates. Every movie poster, or almost every, a handgun in their hand with a tough look, with their hands crossed, with their legs, you know, tough guys. And every one of them had a pistol in their hand. I got so incensed by this. Of course, I didn't have a radio show at the time to sound off with, but I do now. And I'm going to say that Hollywood's had a huge influence on the destruction of our society in this way. I mean, we know about every other way, but we know about the degradation of the morality of America. Tie it right to Hollywood. Go down the list. Tell me a positive thing Hollywood's done in their imagery. Tell me one positive thing Hollywood's done in the last 20 years. Tell me one positive thing other than entertain us. And don't get me wrong, I watch movies at night. I enjoy them. But I'm a grown male. I can watch a movie without being influenced by them. I watch it for various reasons or for pure entertainment, although admittedly in my own tastes I'm more interested in military history and history channels more than I am in anything else. But nevertheless, can you name one positive thing? I'd like to hear one positive thing without challenging you. One positive societal thing that's been done by Hollywood in the last 20 years. We're doing this the day after the Oscars, okay? They give themselves awards. They pat themselves on the back. They wear dresses designed by Nazis and Hitler lovers. We don't even mock them for that. Most of these girls, you look at them, they're innocent kids, by the way. You listen to them, they're just children. You're not mad at them. They're children. Guys like Charlie Sheen, you could be mad at because he should know better. But the girls are just girls. What do you expect a girl to do? She went to the High School of Performing Arts and she acted models. Can you name one positive male role model in Hollywood? Name one. Name somebody who acts like a man. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Savage Nation. We're bored of politics. We are absolutely not going to talk about the imposter. We're not going to talk about the Oscars. To me, it's one and the same. The presidency and Hollywood are about one and the same. I stumbled on another topic, which I think is worth 5 minutes of our time, which is why are boys refusing to get married? Why are boys refusing to become men? Why are so many boys stuck in boyhood? Why do so many guys in their 20s and 30s basically, why are they still like children? What's causing this? Is it that the aggressive nature of... Is it because of the aggressive nature of women? Is it because of the women's movement? Is it because for 30 years there's been propaganda that men are unnecessary? Why is this? Why are there so few men? And especially, by the way, this is a very difficult thing to point out, but it's a demographic reality. Caucasian men in particular are wimps. Young men. You don't see this as much amongst the Latino men. Many of the Latino men will get married young and have families. You don't see this as much amongst other races. You see it primarily amongst Caucasian men in the West. Why is it that they remain Boy Scouts instead of becoming Scoutmasters? Why are so many men shall I say, males, let's put it to you that way, stuck in boyhood. Why is it that they didn't do what probably you did if you're part of my generation? Getting married relatively young, struggling, having children very young, basically killing yourself very young to have a family. Now, what motivated people of my generation to do that? I'm going to lay down a couple of ideas that I have, and then I'm going to ask you your ideas. For one, when I was a young man, I knew what was expected of me. There was no question. My parents, my relatives let me know very clearly that a male in our society should go to college, get a career, find a girl, pick one out of the chorus line, get married and have children, or else there were questions about you. There were questions about you in every way. Like, what's wrong with you that you can't get married? I mean, if you hit 30 and you weren't married already, forget about it. You know what I'm saying? You had to meet someone, get married, and have children. You say, well, that was the dark ages. Really? Hey, schmuck, I'd like to say to you, if it wasn't for guys like your father, you wouldn't be here. Think about what I just said to you. If it wasn't for the so-called dark ages, you wouldn't be here. If your father behaved the way you are, you wouldn't be here. Don't you understand that? So what exactly is going on in our society that so many white men, so many white males are afraid to become men, in plain English? In plain English, that's all. What is doing it? What happened? Why are they so boy-like instead of men? What happened to this country? And there are many answers, by the way. There's not a single answer. So let's start with the callers. I've given you one little example. I think there are others. I mean, we could blame it on Hollywood. We could blame it on the women's movement. We could blame it on medication. We could blame it on the drinking water. We could blame it on a lot of things. And there's probably an element of truth in all of that. There are hormones in our foods that have feminized men, by the way. You say, oh, you know, it's right-wing stuff. No, it's true. Well known. There are plastics that mimic hormones that are turning men into kind of like guppies. And that's been documented. But that's not the sole reason that a lot of men won't get married. They do date girls. They have a lot of sex. There's a lot of sex out there. And that has something to do with it, too. The women aren't holding it back anymore. They're like guys. I'm equal to a guy, so I'll have as many men as I want sexually. Oh, good, so that's why you're not married? Get back to me when you're 35, 40. Tell me what happens then. So what's doing this, that so many white males in particular are unwilling to become men? I'll never forget the day I went into a restaurant. I first moved to California, North Beach. The guy is dead now. I don't remember that. I don't want to talk. And he had a placemat that with his own sayings on it, the old school Italian sayings. And he said, anybody can do the easy thing. A man does the hard thing, that kind of thing. And I liked the guy. We got along very good because I was raised that way. Who said raising a family is supposed to be easy? Who said that having a relationship is supposed to be easy? Who said that? Where is it written? Where'd you get that idea? And we're trying to get to the reason why mainly white males remain boys so long, why they won't get married, why they won't have children. You can't entirely blame them. Take a look at the women out there. You know, I could go into this whole story, and there's no point, because then you'll accuse me of misogyny, which is as far from the truth as you could possibly get. The woman's movement, no doubt, destroyed the whole concept of family in the Western world. Now, you say, well, it's too bad. Women didn't want to be broodmares. They didn't want to just be staying at home while a guy went out and had a good time and, you know, had a career and she stayed home. I understand all of that. But now take a look at where we are today. Take a look at the demographics of America, and you'll understand what I'm talking about. And you'll come to ask yourself, is this the direction you want the country to go in? Because that's the way it's going. And do you want to turn it around? Can you turn it around? What caused it? Why are so many white males remaining boys so long? Why don't they become men? You can only bash Hollywood so much. We know that what it is. It's, you know, it is what it is. It's a big industry. We all enjoy entertainment. And so let it go at that. And as role models, what are they telling our children? And does that partially explain why, in particular, white males are remaining boys for so long, is what we're talking about. You can't blame it all on Hollywood. You can blame it on birth control pills. You can blame it on the women's movement. You can blame it on Hollywood. You can blame it on the death of the church as a role model. You could blame it on the single-parent household with his little father, few fathers around. You could blame it on a lot of things. It's a multifactorial problem. I don't think we're going to solve it just by talking about it, but I'm asking the question. How is it that in my generation, I'll tell you, almost every guy I knew, everyone I knew was married in their 20s, got married and had a child, except one guy who was oriented another way. He happened to die very young of a drug overdose, by the way. But everybody else got married, had children. Why? They were required to, expected to, did so. So you say, oh, well, they were miserable. They were unhappy. Well, don't be so sure, number one. And on the other side, you're telling me that young guys today are so happy because they're not married? You're telling me happiness exists in not getting married? Happiness is having nobody at home? Happiness is having to go out every night and looking for somebody like an animal walking in the streets, stalking, walking around in the gutter looking for somebody like a mate, like a dog, every night walking around? That's happiness? So tell me, why is this happening, particularly to the white male? As I say to you, it is particularly a product of the white male today in the West. You don't see this in most Asian nations. You don't see it in African nations. You see it in primarily in so-called affluent white communities. Why is it happening? Does anyone have an answer?
Savage.
Okay, joining us now with an exclusive report on what he thinks is going on in the Middle East. We all know what's going on is Eric Stackelback, but let's get the update.
Well, Michael, always a pleasure to be here. You know, and over the past few weeks, we've been talking about the Middle East, talking about the chaos there and the various revolutions and revolts breaking out across the Muslim world. This has been going on now for about 2 months. You know, I kept waiting for it to die down in the beginning, but it seems like these revolts not only aren't dying down, they're only spreading more and more to other Arab countries. Now, Egypt and Tunisia fell like dominoes. Tunisia started this whole thing back around Christmas time, actually. This all started off in Tunisia, then Egypt obviously fell, and now we have Libya. Who knows what the outcome is going to be there? Right now, complete chaos. The Verge, I mean, can we call this civil war, Michael? I guess that's the question right now in Libya, as we have anti-government forces and pro-government forces going at it. Gaddafi doesn't look like he's going to step down anytime soon. His sons are defiant as well. So I think we've already seen to a degree there, but what we're going to see more and more is a bloodbath. I really believe this is going to end very, very nasty and very ugly.
Why do you say that?
Gaddafi's digging in his heels. I don't see the rebels, the anti-Gaddafi forces, suddenly backing off. Here's how it could end up. If the rebel forces, God forbid, think back to 1991, where after Operation Desert Storm, President Bush the first, Bush 41, riled up the Iraqi people. You know, the U.S. encouraged the Iraqi people to rise up against Saddam and rise up against the oppressor, and they did a great job of it. In the beginning, they made real strides, took control of a lot of the Iraqi provinces. Saddam was on his heels, just like Gaddafi's on his heels right now. But in the end, Saddam, through his sheer brutality and through, for the Iraqi resistance, no help from the West, no help from America, who essentially got them fired up and then threw them under the bus. They eventually fell to Saddam. Saddam conducted reprisal massacres against the Iraqi resistance, and Saddam was able to hang on to power. Now, right now, that's my worry in Libya. It looks like Gaddafi's out the door.
Really?
The U.S. obviously has gotten behind the resistance there. The resistance seems strong. They've captured several provinces, especially the eastern half of Libya, which has always been an anti-Gaddafi stronghold. That's gone right now. Gaddafi has lost the eastern half of Libya, including Benghazi, which is Libya's second largest city. And he's also lost some cities and towns near the capital of Tripoli, which is kind of the Gaddafi stronghold right now. But who knows what can happen? This is not only a madman, number one. This is a guy who is brutal, bloodthirsty, a terrorist who's committed terrorism against American interests as well over the years and killed a lot of Americans. And no one's really mentioning that in the past few weeks as this has all been unfolding, Michael. But this guy is one of the original terrorist in this wave of jihad that began in, that restarted in 1979 against the West. Gaddafi was the guy. Before bin Laden, there was Muammar Gaddafi during the 1980s as one of the terrorist kingpins, along with Arafat and Khomeini in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And the third reason that Libya might not go, in terms of Gaddafi, might not go the way we want it to go, Gaddafi out the door, is because there's no sure thing, no guarantee right now that the West will stand up for the Libyan resistance. As they're being massacred, there's no sure thing there. There's no guarantee, especially not the Obama administration, but also just the West in general. Great Britain, David Cameron, the British Prime Minister, has made some comments, made some noise in previous days about starting a no-fly zone around Libya. But there's no guarantee here, Michael, that the West will step up.
True.
It's kind of a quandary. What comes after Gaddafi? We have to discuss this right now, just as in every Middle Eastern country right now, you know, the West, especially the left in this country, they're giddy about all these Arab revolts. They think it's great. They think it's democracy blooming. Really? Democracy hasn't bloomed in that region throughout human history. And you're telling me all of a sudden we're going to have Jeffersonian democracy in the Middle East, especially in a place like Libya, where outside of Gaddafi, there's no organized opposition. That is a country that's completely been under Gaddafi's thumb for 40 years, Michael. At least in Egypt, we had some quote-unquote liberal, not including the Muslim Brotherhood, obviously, who are pure jihadists. There was some liberal kind of opposition movements in Egypt. In Libya, there's really nothing. I mean, Gaddafi, talk about repression. There's nothing in Libya. And people I've spoken to, I've never been to Libya personally, but people I've spoken to who've been there say, look, walking around the streets of Tripoli, the people in Libya just look beaten down. They look defeated.
Hmm.
So there was really just none, until this stunning, really, outbreak here, a revolution in Libya, there was really no organized opposition, Michael, in the past 41 years to this madman. Considering the lack of organized opposition, who fills a vacuum if Gaddafi goes? I think what we could see there, Michael, and some people have compared it to Somalia on the Mediterranean, we really could see complete brutal tribalism in Libya, could see civil war. As I said, the eastern half of that country is completely broken away.
Exactly.
Now, I don't know that Gaddafi will be able to regain the east. Who knows what we're going to see there? Do we occupy Libya? Does NATO occupy Libya and try to keep the peace in Libya, try to have that country transition into some sort of pseudo-democracy with some kind of, you know, pro-Western regime there? I mean, I think when Libya, if Gaddafi goes, the questions that will have to be answered by the West are going to have a lot of head spinning here, and there's going to be a lot of uncertainty. I think Libya is a real wild card. If that descends into a Somalia-type situation on the Mediterranean, even if Gaddafi's still in power, Michael, say he maintains power, but the eastern half of Libya breaks away and goes Islamist, and there have been jihadist movements in that eastern half of Libya. Does the Libyan desert all of a sudden become an al-Qaeda hub, become a hub for al-Qaeda training camps, regardless of whether Gaddafi stays or not? If he's weakened and he only maintains control over a certain sector of the country, what happens to that other sector of the country? Do the really bad actors move in, establish al-Qaeda training camps there?
Right, right, right.
Look, right next door to Libya, the North Africa region, Tunisia, Morocco, Algeria, there's a very strong al-Qaeda movement there, al-Qaeda in North Africa. That region's known as the Islamic Maghrib, traditionally. They call themselves al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghrib. Could Libyan jihadists link up with them and try to bring Libya into the jihadist fold? There's so many questions here, Michael, so many question marks. And this is one thing that's certain is that this is going to get even nastier.
Oh, I agree.
Tunisia, by Muslim standards, traditionally pretty moderate. The U.S. so far has not been cultivating the situation there. Ben Ali is gone. The Tunisian dictator was gone, who also, by the way, was good for America and opposed Islamic jihadists. Regardless, he's gone. If I'm the Obama administration, and this makes too much sense for them to actually do, but if I'm the Obama administration, I'm planting some seeds there. I'm planting some pro-American seeds. I'm trying to cultivate any pro-American forces that I can find in Tunisia.
Yeah, but will they do that?
From what I understand, people I talk to, Michael, they're not doing that. And Tunisia's kind of just lying dormant right now, and Tunisia is an open book. Anyone who comes to power there, or anyone who wants to assume power there, could have a real shot. So Tunisia's an open book. Who knows who's going to come to power there? Could a jihadist have traditionally not been that strong in Tunisia, Michael, but just a few weeks ago, one of the biggest terrorist Islamist leaders in Tunisia, he had been banned from the country for years. Of course, he was living in London during the time of his ban. Surprise, surprise. He returned. He made a triumphant return to Tunisia just a few weeks ago, was greeted by a few thousand people at the airport.
Oh, my God.
Could that be an augur of things to come? We hope not. Egypt, and you and I have discussed this, Michael, I don't see any way that Egypt doesn't end up very, very badly for Israel, for America, and for that entire region. I think that the Muslim Brotherhood, the most organized opposition force, I've said it many times, I'll say it again, golden opportunity for this group. They've been waiting for this literally for 70 years. No way they're letting this golden opportunity pass them by. Now, they might participate in elections peacefully, and I think they will.
Really?
I think the route you're going to see the Brotherhood go is a route of deception. Hey, we're moderate. We believe in freedom, democracy. We want to be part of just a political system. We'll take part in elections, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's the route that you will see the Muslim Brotherhood go at first. And as they grow in power, as they grow in influence, as they gain more leverage through elections. And Egyptian society in recent years has already been trending more Islamic. Every poll says that Sharia is a big hit in Egypt among about 90% of the people. And when you're in Egypt now, more and more, whereas you didn't have this 15 years ago, more and more women are wearing the veil. It's becoming more Islamicized as it is. So the Brotherhood, I think the door is wide open for them, and the repercussions of that for America and Israel.
Don't they see the obvious?
Look, the writing's on the wall. And if you talk to the Israelis, and I just returned from Israel 2 weeks ago, you talk to the Israelis, they see it clearly. They're the voice of reason here. They're the adults in the room. I talked to a senior Israeli official who said, look, the West is euphoric about these democracy movements in the Arab world and in Egypt, so-called democracy movements, these revolutions in Egypt and elsewhere. He said, we're looked at as the party pooper because we are urging caution. Israel is acting like the adult in the room here. They're acting sober and clear-headed. You haven't heard a lot out of Israel. You haven't heard a lot out of the Israeli leadership other than to express grave concern about Egypt and the status of that 32-year peace treaty because they're keeping their cards close to the vest. What can they say? They know. They see the writing on the wall. Everyone in Israel, at least, sees the writing on the wall. They live in that neighborhood. Obama doesn't live in that neighborhood. The Israelis live there. And I have to say, Michael, just to close, for Obama to support the ouster of Mubarak when he knew, he had to know that the biggest beneficiary of a post-Mubarak Egypt would be the Muslim Brotherhood. He had to know this, yet he still supported Mubarak's ouster. This support for the ouster of Mubarak, throwing him under the bus, is going to go down, in my mind, is one of the greatest blunders in U.S. foreign policy history.
Thanks for the update, Eric.
Michael, thanks so much. And a little plug here. My book, The Terrorist Next Door, How the Government is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat, will be released everywhere on May 2nd, coast to coast, by Regnery Publishers. And it's hard-hitting stuff, everything we discuss here on the show. And I hope everyone can pick it up. Thanks again, Michael.
This is The Savage Nation.
Savage.
So last night, I'm in bed again watching too much television. I'm starting to get embarrassed now. The weather's bad, so I have an excuse to stay home and watch television, and I do it, and I shouldn't. Because when the children were young, we didn't have a television. I refused to let them watch TV. I was one of those. They both turned out great. Maybe it helped. But now I find myself watching television at night, and too much of it, mainly movies. In fact, either the History Channel, military history, the Science Channel, National Geographic, or a movie. So late at night, I'm watching a movie from 1948 that had me captivated for a number of reasons. It was, I don't know the name of it, but it was about an FBI agent who goes undercover into the underworld, pretends to be a criminal, and it was so unbelievably bad that I couldn't stop watching it. You know, and now we walk down the halls of the FBI where J. Edgar Hoover, remember those movies? The guys all had those Dick Tracy suits. So I'm watching the movie, and I start to see certain things in it. A lot of the characters were from real life. When they went into a gym in Philadelphia where the scenes were shot, they were real boxers training in a gym, which was very interesting to watch. The characters. Where are the men like that? I ask myself, what happened to men that they've all become almost homogenized in this country? When I was a young boy, the men were all like weird looking. Guys had like nasal hair, ear hair. But aside from that, I'm doing that to attract your eyes and ears to what I'm saying to you. The men look different. Now everyone has a homogenized, pasteurized, aluminumized look. I don't understand what happened to my country. Men were very unique. I'm saying, you take a gym full of white men, they all look different. They had weird faces. Now everyone has the same kind of like idiotic grin. But anyway, so the movie's about an FBI agent who goes undercover and gets into the rackets, whatever, in order to bust him. So, you know, I just saw the movie with Jack Nicholson. What is it called? The Untouchables. I forget. The Untouched. I don't even remember the movie's name. They will help me out. The Departed. And it was excellent. I really liked Nicholson. I liked DiCaprio. I liked Matt Damon. They were all good in the movie, and the movie was very captivating. But a good portion of the plot was taken directly from this 1948, slap them together and, you know, throw it out their movie. Now, that's not why I'm talking about it. In the movie, there's a quick scene about them wanting a fighter who looks like he's going to be the favorite to take a fall for money. You know, take a dive, in other words. In other words, he's the favorite, and they say to him, if you go down in the third round, we'll make a lot of money because you're the favorite. And in all those movies from the 45 era up until about when the hippie scum took over the movie business, after the hippie communist scum from New York City took over the movie business, most of the movies were about temptations and honor. A fighter was set, it was said, you take a dive and you'll make a lot of money. And it was the tension of the fighter saying, no, I have honor. I will not take a dive. And what usually happened to him is he got beaten up or killed. Or you go back to On the Waterfront with Marlon Brando, that great movie. What was that all about? That was about honor. He was unwilling to take a dive, in other words, and he died for it. So the movies were always about the temptations and the honor of the man who would not accept the temptation for money, for the quick buck. That's what the tension was. That's what the storyline was. That's what America grew up on. That's what America became strong on. Now you got Murdoch, who's into the quick buck, and so he'll take the temptation for a higher rating and a quicker buck. No honor. Do you understand what I'm saying to you or not? How a society can be formed by its art, and you can't condemn every movie ever made. That would be absurd. Some are good, some are bad, some are indifferent. Some are funny, some are not funny, blah, blah, blah. But what I'm getting at is there were movies about morality in the days that I grew up. For example, crime never paid. You never could see the bad guy win in a movie when I grew up. My father taught me that. He said, you notice, Michael, every movie the bad guy gets caught in the end. Now we know that's nonsense. All you got to do is look at the U.S. Senate. We understand that. But in those days, you were conditioned by your movie to realize you'd get caught in the end. So I asked my father, why is that? He said, well, the FBI worked out something with Hollywood where Hollywood agreed never to show the bad guy winning because they didn't want to encourage people to go into that line of work. Now, compare that to the movies being produced now by the hippie pothead scum from hell in the movie business today, where the bad guy is always shown to win, and the straight guy is shown to be a moron. Play On the Waterfront. Then I'll go back.
Charlie, it was you. Remember that night in the garden, you came down my dressing room and said, kid, this ain't your night. We're going for the price on Wilson. You remember that? This ain't your night. My night, I could have taken Wilson apart. So what happens? He gets the title shot outdoors in a ballpark, and what do I get? A one-way ticket to Palookaville. You was my brother, Charlie. You should have looked out for me a little bit. You should have taken care of me just a little bit so I wouldn't have to take them dives for the short-end money.
Well, I had some bets down for you. You saw some money.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody. Instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it.
All right, we got the picture. Get out the Kleenex. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum. Now, what you have today are people who are bums, who have no class, who think they're somebody. You get the picture? Do you understand how hard the job is that I do to try to put everything into context? It's almost impossible. When you have such power that they can turn upside down, straight up, and you don't even know which way is up anymore, and you don't know what honor is anymore. But I hope you understood what I'm telling you, that the movies in those days were always about a hero being tempted to take a dive for money, for example, and not taking it.